Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is October 22nd, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Debate's Done, 12 Days to Go. We're going to get to some market performance, initial jobless claims, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, M2 money stock, which are both at all-time highs. Thank you very much. Of course, some debate coverage, which we're going to kickstart this podcast with. I want to cover a handful of topics. COVID-19, the minimum wage was brought up. Healthcare, energy, Hunter Biden, and tariffs. Now, there are other issues that were, of course, discussed and brought up by both candidates and by the moderator. I keep these podcasts to 30 minutes. We're not going to have enough time to go through each and every bullet point, but I think we're going to have a good discussion, finally, about a decent debate between the president and former Vice President Joe Biden this evening on some of the issues that were finally discussed. Now, a lot of issues, a lot of structural issues, were, of course, not brought up. They were not discussed. That's no surprise to me. That's no surprise to this audience. And then we'll give a vote count update as well as those early votes continue to come in large numbers. So, the bar was extremely low for this evening's debate because of the disaster that was that first debate, which really did some harm to President Trump. And you can check the tape. Despite my ranting about that first debate, in there I did mention that despite the disaster that it was, Trump was still able to land a few good punches on Biden. But those things got lost in all of the junk, in all of the noise. And again, this is me coming at this, just looking at this from a Republican perspective or a Democrat perspective, because I don't like either of these guys. I don't want either of them in the White House, but one of them is very likely going to be in the White House because people aren't going to vote in, unfortunately. I wish it was true, but it's not going to happen, most likely. Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian candidate. So this is just the reality that we're going to have to deal with. So I'm just trying to put my political analyst hat on and just look at it from that perspective. So in the first debate, Trump had some punches against Biden, but it got lost in the shuffle. And because that happened, because it was a disaster, a lot of people who were still undecided, about 6% of the country, which is not too much, but it's still significant. It's still that far into the election back in September 29th. Most of them seemingly flocked to Joe Biden. Now, of course, they may have changed their mind in the interim, but most likely not, and a lot of them have probably already voted. Now, flipping through some of the stations, which I hope you all do, I really do, I hope you were flipping through CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and any other one that you want to watch, to get some different takes, different focus groups, what have you. If you're just turning on one station, you should be ashamed of yourself because you have to get other opinions in your head. You got to hear them. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them. Hey, I didn't like turning on some of the stations this evening, believe me when I tell you, but you got to do it. You got to hear what some people are talking about. So, the issues that I again want to bring up tonight: COVID-19, the minimum wage, healthcare, energy, Hunter Biden, and tariffs. So let's start with COVID-19. That's what they kickstarted the debate with. The president defaulted to his default position. I shut down the airplanes coming in from China. And that's pretty much it. That's what he has been falling back on. That's what Vice President Pence mentioned in his debate with Kamala Harris. They shut it down. Now, they can bring up some other things, of course, but that's the sticking point. And then President Trump was in an interview recently with Eric Bolling, and Eric asked the president, if you had a mulligan, if you had a do-over, is there anything you would do over with respect to how you handled COVID-19? And the president's response was, not much. Not much. You know, this was the perfect striking moment for Joe Biden to seize on, to bring up that interview, to bring up what the president said, and then bring up what this country might look like If we were more proactive, if there was more transparency, if the White House was more aggressive, like other countries were, like Japan, like South Korea, even Australia, if we had followed that rule, that model, just some semblance of it, right out of the gate, we wouldn't have anywhere near 210,000 deaths. Might not even have as many cases as we do. And of course, the president brought that up too with the testing. The reason why we have so many cases is because of the testing. Which of course is ridiculous. People would have it regardless. What the testing does, it says, yeah, you do have it. Now we know. Now we can trace it. Who have you been with? Where have you gone? Try to slow and stop the spread. It's ridiculous. The president dropped the ball on this. Check the tape of this podcast earlier this year. When you have the world's second largest economy shutting down, you pay attention. You pay attention big time. Something is amiss. Something is going wrong. And now we know from the president himself on the tapes from Bob Woodward with his book Rage that the president was aware of how severe this was going to turn into, how severe this was going to be. Well, Bob, I don't want to panic the American people. I want to play it down. I always want to play it down. I continue to play it down. And again, I think Joe Biden hits it on the head with his response, and he brought it up today. The American people don't panic. You panicked. And on that type of personal attack of the president, you would expect a sharp comeback. The president doesn't have one. Doesn't have one because he knows. He knows he dropped it. He knows he dropped the ball on this. And I'm not laying all of this at the feet of the president. Not for a second. Some people want to blame the president for these deaths. I don't do that. I don't do that. This is a pandemic. It's new. There are no quote-unquote experts on this pandemic, on this strain of coronavirus. But that doesn't mean that there aren't X type of environment and that you should err on the side of caution in these types of situations. We still don't know the long-term effects of COVID-19 and how this is going to affect people weeks, months, years from now. Hopefully it's nothing significant, but we don't know that yet. And that's why you err on the side of caution. And there is no question that what the president says, a lot of people do. A lot of people will listen to it. He's the president of the United States, for God's sake. People are going to pay attention, especially his base. So when he's wishy-washy, well, once they told us to wear the mask, they didn't tell us to wear the mask, then they said to put it back on. Just wear the damn thing. Get it under control. Test, trace. The president didn't want to do it. He knew it was going to happen. We had this discussion months and months ago. He's open about it. You just have to pay attention. He didn't want to do the testing. That's why it was delayed. Because he knew that those numbers were going to go up. And if you have high numbers, people are going to maybe panic because he doesn't really have a plan. He's not being transparent with it. Or most of all, and I think this is probably really the kicker of it, the stock market would sell off because that's his. And he brought that up again with the 401ks. Well, half the country doesn't have them. 10% of the country owns 90% of financial assets. 1% of the country owns 50%+ of financial assets. And in a 401k, you're probably broadly diversified. You only have a handful of options to pick from that your company offers. And the stock market is not driven by the broader market. The stock market is driven by a handful of up and up because of money printing. Again, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet hit a record. We're going to get to that. Money stock, M2 money supply, hitting a new record. Where's that money making its way into? That's right, the stock market. This is not organic growth. This is a banana republic. And Joe Biden, with his plan, it's pretty much what is already put in place by the White House. The White House just doesn't want to implement it. So this is just round and round we go. And the president wants to say, well, Joe Biden wouldn't have done this. Well, With all due respect, Mr. President, Joe Biden is not the president. You are. The president says he wants this open and that open and this open and that open, and somehow he's trying to blame Joe Biden for it. Well, that just doesn't make any sense. But I digress. That's the COVID-19 story. It's the same song and dance that we've heard before. Clearly, he must think that that works for him, that I shut down the planes and that was it, even though there were exemptions on it, and we have a significant amount of cases, and we have a extremely high number of deaths, and of course, those are associated with comorbidities, old age. So, you know, I understand that these numbers are likely inflated, but nonetheless, if we had been more aggressive, if we had been more transparent out of the gate, if we had adopted something more akin to what South Korea, Japan, even Australia did, we'd be in a much better place right now. Unfortunately, we're not. And as we enter the winter months, we also have to contend with the traditional flu season. And what's also heartbreaking at this juncture is the fact that a lot of restaurants, if they're able to survive, have been surviving due to outdoor dining. Well, now as we enter the colder months, what are they going to do? People aren't just, they're not going to eat outside when it's 30 degrees out. Most people just aren't going to pick that option. So we got a lot of work to do. When it comes to the minimum wage, I thought this was interesting that they brought this up. Of course, Joe Biden said, oh yeah, I want the minimum wage to go up to $15 and I want them to do it now. And Kristen Welker, the debate's moderator this evening, said, well, wouldn't that put small businesses out of business? And Joe Biden said, well, you know, I think we're going to have to bail them out too, because one in six small businesses is already out, and we know how bad this is going to get. Well, we got to bail them out too. So here we go. Continuation of more bailouts, more bailouts, more bailouts. So let's raise the minimum wage to $15 across the board, and then let's bail out everybody again. Ain't that just dandy? Now, to the question as to whether or not minimum wage will put a business out of business is a legitimate question. It depends on the business. Now, if you're somebody who employs a lot of engineers or a lot of high-skilled individuals, you're not even close to paying these people $15, so it doesn't matter to you, but you might still be a small business. Now, if you're a small business that employs a lot of service sector jobs, yeah, $15 could potentially put you out of business depending on what part of the country you are in. So Donald Trump jumped on this and sort of made that argument. Now, it's most definitely going to hurt the small business, and it's most definitely going to hurt the individual who doesn't have that many skills, because now they might just not be hired, because the small business owner might say, you know what, I'm going to purchase a piece of equipment instead. I'm going to purchase a touch screen instead of actually having somebody there at the desk to take an order. Just touch the screen and somebody else in the back will take care of it. So those individuals are going to suffer those types of losses and opportunity because the price for their employment has just gone up. So it's a little wishy-washy. It's a little back and forth as with respect to whether or not it's going to put them out of business. It depends on what type of business it is. But it's definitely going to hurt those smaller businesses and those low-skilled individuals if the minimum wage is increased across the board. So that's something to be mindful of. But this is a very emotional topic because people want higher wages. Well, I always contend, well, why do you want higher wages? It's because the cost of living is so damn high, but there's no inflation, they tell us. Now, what happens if your cost of living was a lot more affordable? You think there'd be as many people complaining that they want higher wages? I don't think so, because you could go to the market, you can spend maybe a tenth of your paycheck as opposed to half of your paycheck, and you'll feel a lot better. But if you're going to continue to pump money into the system, well, it's going to have some significant effects. And that's what's all coming to a head right now. But I thought that was interesting. Donald Trump made a good point with respect to, well, this should be a state issue. Well, it should be a state issue. But then Kristen Welker brought up the point, well, Mr. President, you were considering doing this at the federal level of $15. Well, the federal government doesn't just exist within Washington, D.C. It has property all over the country, national parks, other offices across the country that employs lower skilled individuals. So she was kind of caught in that, and he kind of backpedaled a little bit. But nonetheless, I thought this was interesting that this was brought up. This is not one of the structural issues, but it does touch on some of them. So that was interesting to see that dynamic. Of course, both candidates played to their respective base, as was the case with respect to healthcare. Now, Donald Trump was attempting to put Joe Biden in that Bernie Sanders camp of the Democrat Party. Joe Biden was clearly prepared for this, and they had this back and forth before, too, that Joe Biden claims, well, I wouldn't be here as the presidential candidate if I was Bernie Sanders or the other 20 candidates that were on the stage that were all calling for socialized medicine. I was the only one that stood up and said, no, I don't want socialized medicine. I want the public option. Now, of course, this is the slow, slow drip, ladies and gentlemen, to getting socialized medicine. The government does not walk away, but it is true that Joe Biden was one of few, or maybe the only, I don't recall, because there was 20 idiots up on the stage, claiming that he didn't want socialized medicine. He wanted a public option. And basically, he makes the argument that for people who would qualify for Medicaid, but for whatever reason, don't go to the office and sign up for it, they're automatically enrolled. So whoever would qualify for Medicaid but doesn't take the time to actually sign up for it, however many millions of people that is, don't have to worry about it. Under the Biden care plan, you're already signed in, locked and loaded. Now, on Trump's side, we've been hearing about the best healthcare policy for the past 5 years, and it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. And this is what President Obama hit on Trump the other day in his rally in Philadelphia. We've been waiting for this thing for the past 2 weeks, for the past 10 years, because the Republicans have been complaining about Obamacare, and rightly so, for the past 10 years since this thing was brought into existence in 2010, upheld by the Supreme Court in 2012. Oh, well, hey, you had a red wave in 2016. Where's the replacement? Where's this better idea? Well, non-existent. Non-existent. And the president has no answer for this. It's the same thing. I mean, it's like his taxes again, which was brought up. It's laughable. Well, I'm under audit. I can't do it. Well, where's this thing? It's like, well, I'll show you this plan once I show you my taxes. So don't hold your breath. You're going to pass out. It's ridiculous. And of course, my position on all of this is that the government should not be involved in healthcare. This is why your costs keep going up. This is why your service goes down. It's ridiculous. The Republicans can't even come out and make that argument. So this is nothing. This is just a political football, and you're caught in the middle on something that is extremely personal, and unfortunately, it's extremely expensive for many people. This is healthcare. But both sides play to their respective bases as best they could, of course, because Trump doesn't have a plan, so you can only go so far with no plan. And then Biden stating his argument, only going to go so far, but then making the argument that healthcare is not a privilege, it is a right. But then I go back to the argument, well, we know we have a lot of rights. Just start with the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments to the Constitution. Freedom of speech. Freedom to peacefully protest. Well, okay, I have that right. But does that mean I get to go to a government office and say, I want to peacefully protest? And I want to get a sign? I want to make a sign? So give me $100 so I can go make this sign? No. Or tell them to make it for you because it's your right? No, that's not how it works. You have the right to defend yourself. You have the right to bear arms under the Second Amendment. Does that mean you get to go into a gun store and say, I want that one? They say, well, where's the money? Oh, hold on. Let me go to a government office and get the money because this is a right. That means the government's going to pay for it, and then I'll come back and pay you. Can you do that? Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's not how it works. So why do they think that, well, healthcare is a right, therefore the government has to pay for it or provide it to you? It's ridiculous. It's nonsense. And in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, we talk about the price of medical care, health insurance, prescription. I mean, it's all in there. We talk about this. Medicare, Medicaid, the trends. It's ridiculous Once the government got its fat, greasy, greedy fingers on it, that was it. And they just want to get a stranglehold on this because it's such a big part of the economy. And it's very emotional. So now that you have it, people don't want to lose it, their Obamacare, a lot of people, because they have it. They don't want to be treated as a political football. Well, who would have thunk that one? But once it's already there, it's very difficult to get rid of it because people are going to be cynical. They're not going to trust the system. They're not going to trust the politicians and the government to do away with it and transition smoothly. This is a cluster. Thank you very much, government. Energy was another interesting topic. Joe Biden is trying to really thread the needle here because he's got Looney Tunes so far out the left with the Green New Deal and all this stuff that they just can't, for the life of them, understand that you can't not just turn a switch and miraculously have renewable energy 24/7 to power everything. It's not going to happen. You have to have a transitional fuel. You have to. And Biden is trying his best to thread this needle, and time after time after time, he keeps messing it up. Keeps messing it up. Just like Trump keeps messing a handful of things up, Biden keeps messing this up over and over and over again. And at the end of the debate, Joe Biden stumbled once again with this, basically saying, yeah, we're going to get rid of the oil industry too. Okay, paraphrasing. And then he tried to catch himself and said, the president takes everything out of context, blah, 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 blah. It wasn't a good look. Donald Trump seized on the moment. He said, oh, that's not going to be good. That's a big statement, Joe. That's a big statement. It's not going to be good for Texas. It's not going to be good for Pennsylvania. And that might very well be true. That might sway some people. That is quite possible. This is still any man's race. I still have it leaning Biden-Harris, but Donald Trump can still win. I've always said that he could. And he most definitely can. He has pathways to it. That statement, is it going to do him in at this stage? I'm not so certain. I don't think so, but it could. It definitely does not help him. He still has 11, 12 days left to sort of rectify this and sort of better explain what he actually meant. And Trump's going to have to rectify some of his statements as well, but that's par for the course when it comes to politics. But that was a moment that Trump is going to seize on over the coming days, especially when he hits the trail in Texas and in Pennsylvania. So we'll see how that plays out. But at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand who is for clean energy. Well, it should be everybody. Who is for renewable energy? Well, it should be everybody. And there are a lot of major oil companies, oil and gas companies, that are divesting from oil and gas and are starting to get into renewable sources of energy. Well, why? Well, because that's the trend of the future. That is the future. And that's not to be demonized. And it's really not to be politicized either, but it's going to be because we live in such a hyper-politicized environment. But it's a natural fit. These oil giants, they employ some of the best engineers and scientists in the world. They have the supply chains. They have the property. They have the capital. They have the political connections to get things done around the world. So this is just a natural transition. I mean, how many candlestick makers are there? Not too many. You know why? Because there's this thing called electricity and light bulbs. Look them up. Most people used to work on a farm, but they don't anymore because there's these things out there called tractors. Look them up. This is a natural evolution. This is a natural progression of technology and industry, and it should be welcomed. Could you imagine not having to pay a utility bill? How much more money would that put in your pocket at the end of the day? Probably a big difference, huh? Now, I used to be a pricing analyst on a commercial and industrial desk for electricity. Big power plant, I mean, big built skyscrapers, big manufacturing facilities, big warehouses. They use a lot of energy and it comes with a hefty price tag. Could you imagine if they were able to greatly reduce or eliminate their utility bill altogether because they are employing some form of renewable source of energy? Could you imagine how much more money they could invest, reinvest into their company, into productivity, research and development, pay increases, pass on those savings to their consumers, meaning now you can pay a lower price but still get a high quality product, if not a higher quality product? This should not be demonized. This should be welcomed. The problem is it's so political. It is extremely political. You want the tiny windows from the AOC and blah, 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 blah. And it's crazy. And that puts people further and further into their respective silos when, no, that's what should be happening. Its economy is a scale. It takes time. You can't flip a switch and have windmills all over the place or solar panels or hydroelectric or any other type of renewable source of energy overnight. It takes time. There needs to be a plan. So it's going to be interesting to see how that resonates, because I think most of the country is probably going to lean towards that renewable source of energy, as opposed to just saying, well, he wants to get rid of the oil industry. I think that can be fixed. But we shall see. The president is extremely good at putting his finger in an open wound and exploiting it. So if anybody can make good off of this, it's going to be President Trump, but we'll see what that does. Hunter Biden came up, of course, with the emails and the laptops and Giuliani and all this crap. I don't focus on this. Flipping through the stations, once Hannity came on and he had a couple people starting to talk about this, I changed the channel, because this is the little boy who cries wolf. This is the Trump campaign attempting to replay 2016. Lock him up. Emails, Russia this, something over there, nothing happened. I'm not paying attention to this. If I want to be proven wrong, let me be proven wrong. I don't care, but I'm not wasting my time on this. This is ridiculous. You want to continue to follow the little boy who cries wolf? Be my guest. Be my guest and knock yourself out, but I am done with it, because this guy lies. If he's moving his mouth, he's probably lying, and there was a whole host of lies and exaggerations in this evening's debate as well. He just was a little bit more calm about it. That's all. It was style. And if you turn on Fox, this was a home run for the president. You know why? Because he acted presidential. If it's a home run for the president to act presidential, you got a problem. You understand what I'm saying? You have a problem. It was such a low bar, as we stated at the top of the podcast, from the first debate. Not hard to hit a grand slam or a home run when it was a you-know-what show on the first one. So that's the Hunter Biden thing. Joe Biden just simply denies it. Whatever. I'm done with it. You want to be fascinated by it? Again, knock yourself out. Tariffs were again brought up, and the president again erroneously makes the claim that China is paying for them. Well, let me tell you something else. I used to work for an industrial distributor. Metals, chemicals, plastics, gloves, everything. Everything. When these tariffs were implemented, we got nothing but letters from our suppliers, from our vendors, saying, hey, your prices are going up. So now we had a decision as a company to make. Got a couple options. You can eat the price increase, so it's going to eat into your margin, or you can send a letter to your customers, our customers, saying, hey, our prices are going up because of these tariffs. Unfortunately, so are yours. And that was the option that we adopted. So when it came time to invoice these customers, I didn't send invoices to the Chinese Communist Party. I sent invoices to our customers, American companies. They paid the tariffs. Very simple. This is ridiculous. It's just completely false when these words are uttered from the president's mouth and his idiot advisor, Peter Navarro. Sick of him. Sick of him, as you can tell. So just so you understand, because the other thing is, from their logic, China pays us the tariffs, goes into our treasury, and then all of that money goes to bail out the farmers, because the farmers got screwed on this deal, as did others. So they want you to believe that the Chinese send us checks to put into our treasury, even though China has tariffs on us, which, by their logic, would mean that the United States is sending a check to Beijing to put in the Chinese treasury. But that's not how it works. This is very simple. But I guess if you say it enough times, people will start to believe it. It's utterly ridiculous, but that's what it is. Vote count update. Let's get to it. That's the debate. Most people are in the process of voting. Most people have already made their minds up. There is not going to be a big switch unless there is some type of bombshell over the next 12 days. And it could happen. It could happen. It's 2020. Anything can happen. But here we have 48.7 million votes. Again, this is out of the election project from the University of Florida. 48.7 million votes have been cast. A breakdown, mail ballots are at 34.2 million. In-person votes are at 14.5. Turnout as a percentage of 2016 total turnout currently stands at 35.3%. Total votes in 2016 were about 137, 138 million, if I recall correctly. Most analysts are expecting turnout this year to be closer to about 150, maybe even as high as 160. So that'll be a big increase. And of course, we are going to find out in a couple weeks' time where a lot of that enthusiasm lies. But most likely, this is a referendum on Donald Trump. You either want 4 more years of this, or you're tired of it. You either want the unity message of Joe Biden, or you want this, basically some of the same policies and rhetoric of Donald Trump. And there hasn't been much of a vision for the next 4 years. No healthcare plan, no real economic plan. It's Joe Biden's America, Not a lot of positivity. Just let's go back to where we were before the pandemic, and it's all nonsense. Destroyed all these arguments before. Check the tapes. So that's it with respect to the debates, the vote count. Already 32 minutes into it. Real quickly, we will go into the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Total assets are standing at a record high, 7.177 trillion. So $7,177 billion is now the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. These are total assets, okay? That is an all-time high. The all-time previous high, the previous all-time high, was back in June at $7,168 billion. So we're higher by about $9 billion overall. Now, when you look to M2 Money Stock, also making a new all-time high, standing at $18,794 billion. This is an increase of what we got here, $106 billion over the prior week. Now, what's interesting to note here, with these increases, we haven't seen a market increase with respect to the major indexes on Wall Street. Typically, this has been moving hand in hand. More liquidity thrown into the system, stock market goes up. More liquidity thrown into the system, stock market goes up. Is the market saying no more? Is the laws of diminishing marginal return starting to kick in? Now, we're not going to know for some time yet. But as we noted in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, and as I've been stating here for the past couple of years with these asinine policies, that there's going to come a day when the market calls BS, and that's going to be all she wrote. When we get there is anybody's guess, but that day of reckoning will come because nobody and nothing is bigger than the market. Real quickly, two initial jobless claims, then we'll do a more thorough discussion of this tomorrow. We do have that pause from California. That is no longer the case. So that, I guess, has been taken care of. We have initial jobless claims for the week ending October 17th come in at 787,000. So that's still a staggering and heartbreaking number. But it is below 800,000. We've been stuck in that 800,000 range for quite a while. Again, 787,000 jobs for the prior week initial claims. For the prior week, October 10th, that was revised downward and is now sitting at 842,000. For the week ending October 10th for continuing claims, we are now at about 8.4 million Americans on continued claims. This was a week-over-week decrease of slightly over 1 million. So again, that's trending in the right direction, but we don't know for how long because of all of the moratoriums and all of the distortionary effects that still exist within the system. When we take everything into aggregate, persons claiming UI benefits in all programs, we come to a total of 23 1.1 million Americans. This is a decrease from the prior week of about 1 million individuals. Again, moving in the right direction, but for how long we shall see. This is still a stubbornly high figure. The largest drop came from regular state benefits, down 1.2 million. Another significant decrease came from the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, one of the children of the Nobody Cares Act. However, an increase of 509,000 we witnessed with respect to Pandemic Emergency UC, which is another child of the Nobody Cares Act. And this one pertains more closely to small business owners and gig workers. So, and I have no question in my mind that that's a combination of both gig workers and small businesses. And if that continues to trend upward, well, then that must mean that there is further deterioration in the small business sector, which would be no surprise to us, unfortunately, because we can bail out the biggest corporations with the drop of a hat, but God forbid you help the small businesses. Again, I'm against all the bailouts, but if you're going to give it out, it's already done. It's already done. Help the people who actually really need it and don't have access to capital markets in big banks. For God's sake, do it. And then tomorrow I'm going to have to talk about Goldman Sachs paying a big fine. Nobody goes to jail. Again, two-tier justice system. Screw the people and let's bail them out again too. Why not? So there you have it. 23.1 million Americans still claiming some form of unemployment insurance benefit. That will be for the week ending October 3rd. Recall that lags a couple of weeks. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Debate's done. 12 days to go. Any man's race. There's momentum, there's passion, there's a referendum, there's a lot at stake, and unfortunately, these are the two demented idiots we get to choose from. Of course, I'm voting for the Libertarian candidate, Jo Jorgensen, because she actually stands for something and knows what she's talking about, but there you have it. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.